Happy Easter, and also Happy Mother's Day. I hope you're doing all well as we celebrate the fourth Sunday of Easter and pretty much the midpoint of the Easter season. Today's homily is going to be a little bit different. In fact, I'm starting today a four-week parish mission. All four of these weeks are going to be a little bit different. And we won't be reflecting as much on the readings or the prayers of the Mass, but instead something a little bit more local, a little bit more near and dear to our hearts. I'd like us to be reflecting on what it means to be a parish, and what it means to be parishioners, and how is God calling us to be more invested and to be more engaged in both. Today's homily has three purposes, in addition to reflecting on those questions, or three movements, really. I want to make you smile, so I'm going to tell you a little bit of a story. I want to make you think, so I want to share with you how things are going in the parish and some serious concerns that need to be raised. And I want to animate you, or rather, I want you to open yourselves to be animated by the Holy Spirit. So I want to leave you with questions and things to pray about and discuss in your families and in your homes and with each other. So let's jump into it. First of all, the story, because it is Mother's Day, and so I have a mom story that kind of relates to all of this. It has to do when I was about 13 years old, typical 13-year-old, me and my brother and sister. We didn't much like doing our chores, and I suppose like any of us kids, we would often drag our heels or complain or just do a really poor job so that mom would have to nag us or go back and do it after us or have us redo it over and over. And apparently she got fed up with this because one day she calls us into the living room and says, "You know what? I am tired of fighting with you guys. I'm tired of doing this over and over again. So I am not going to insist that you do your chores. You are now free from doing your chores. You don't have to do them. You don't have to worry about them. I'm not going to hassle you. However, also, because you are not doing your chores, I will not be doing mine. I am going on strike. And so I will not be cooking meals. I will not be helping you. I will not be packing lunches for school. I will not be helping you with any of the things that you need. I, for the foreseeable future, I'm your mother, but I am going to be stepping back." And okay, what does that mean? Like, what do we do for meals? "Oh, well, you know, you can use the kitchen. I mean, you're not allowed to use the stove or the oven. I mean, all the utilities, those are paid for by your dad and the work that he does. And of course, he's not going to be affected by this. But those are not tools that you're allowed to use, even though you might be able to use them. But I'm afraid since you're not contributing to the household, you won't be allowed to use those. You're welcome to make cereal or make sandwiches, but you're not allowed to cook. You're not allowed to use any of the ingredients in the refrigerator. You're not allowed to use any of the special ingredients in the cupboard. So it's all going to be very basic meals." And of course, your dad and your youngest brother, my baby brother, who was infant at the time, they're contributing as best they can. And so I will continue to cook and help and clean for them and do all the things that they need. But the three of you, you're on your own. And so off you go. And that was it. That was the announcement, and off we went. And we didn't really know what that meant, you know, except that, oh, we don't have to do our chores. And that sounded pretty good. And, you know, peanut butter and jelly, that's fine, you know, I don't complain about that. And cereal, that works out pretty well. Unbeknownst to us, of course, mom was smarter than we were. And so she planned it out pretty well. She, every evening, cooks these amazing meals. My mom's a pretty talented cook as it stands. And so she would cook these meals, and she, I'm sure, found these meals that needed to be cooked for several hours so the house would fill with these lovely smells. And she'd present them, and I could be wrong on my memory, but I seem to remember that she also planned dessert for every single one. And so, of course, we would have our peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and she and Dad would talk about how nice the meal was and how much they were looking forward to the dessert and how it was really good. And we would quietly eat our sandwiches and then go to bed and whatnot. And then we'd wake up in the morning. And again, cereal. And we never had sugared cereals in our house, but mom made sure that we didn't even have like Cheerios and no sugar allowed because that's one of the ingredients in the cupboard. So it was just cornflakes. And again, my memory may be wrong, but she may have made sure there was only dehydrated milk. So dehydrated milk and cornflake for breakfast, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches for lunch and for dinner. Oh, and soda, which was a treat for us, which we weren't allowed to have now because it was one of the things in the fridge. We lived in Hawaii, and mom would sit on her lawn chair. We were homeschooled at the time. So we'd be doing our work or whatever, and mom would sit in the lawn chair with a cooler full of sodas, and she would just drink them, making sure she was in full view of us. So day one went okay. Day two was a bit sketchy. By day three, it was sinking in. This could not last. This needed to change. And so we had a little powwow, my brother and my sister and I. I remember, I think we actually sat underneath the piano. We were like, we have to go apologize. We have to go and we have to fix this. We have to do anything, whatever it takes. So So we all march outside to the lawn chair where mom is sipping her umpteenth soda. And, you know, we present ourselves. Oh, can I help you? Yeah, you know, we want to apologize. Oh, what do you want to apologize for? Well, we're really sorry for not doing our chores. We'll do them again. Will you please come off of strike? Well, you know, I don't want to force you guys to do anything that you don't want to do. You know, are you sure? I mean, I'm not really interested in having this fight again and again. And, you know, to be honest, it's working okay for me. And no, Mom, we promise we'll do our chores. We won't complain. You know, would you please come off of strike? All right. But I mean it. You guys are doing this of your own free will. Yes, Mom, we are. And that was it. It was all done. And I don't know if we were perfect in our resolution to do chores or to pitch in. But I will tell you that my siblings and I, we remember the few days that Mom went on strike. And we brought it up as adults later on. And talked to Mom about it. And like, how was that for you? And she goes, oh, it was the worst. She says, I watched the house get dirtier and dirtier. And I knew that if I did the work, you'd never learn the lesson. Because then you'd think it was worthwhile that, oh, look, Mom's doing our chores for us. And she says, to boot, I never cooked super rich meals every single night, but I needed to make you suffer. And then she says, and I never drank that many sodas, but I had like 5 sodas a day because I needed you to see me doing that. She says, it was terrible. I was so relieved when you guys came, and then I had to pretend like it was all okay to make sure you guys were committed. And so it was a bit of relief years later to kind of realize, all right, that was a thing for her too. But yeah, don't cross Mom, guys. Even on Mother's Day, we want to just emphasize that they are to be respected and revered all the time. Now, you know, in talking about this in the context of our parish, I definitely want to emphasize I'm not your dad, and I know that, and I'm your spiritual father, and I'm committed to that. And please rest assured, this isn't some sort of prelude to I'm going on strike, not at all. But it does drive home, and you've heard me talking about this, especially with ushers, but also with other invitations as well, that we have a need, we have a very particular need in our parish to renew and to revitalize the various works in our parish and also the various stewardship. And it is perhaps more acute than you realize. And this leads us to sort of the second part of what I want to talk about, because I really want to emphasize to you that it isn't just out of a desire of, hey, I want this or this would be nice. But our parish finds itself in the beginnings of, in the early stages of what could be a very serious problem. And to emphasize that, I want to share with you some of my experience before I came to St. Mark's. Some of you know that before I came here, I was assigned down in Lewis County, and I was pastor of 9 parishes. I had 2 retired priests helping me out and a vicar, so you know, don't be too impressed. But what you may not know, and I don't know that I've talked about it to any great deal, any great amount, is that of those 9 parishes, when I got there, in relatively short order, it became very clear to me and ultimately to those that I reported to that some of the parishes needed to be closed down. And over 4 years, I closed 4 parishes. And in fact, before I arrived at those parishes, I had helped one parish through a transition, effectively a closure from one kind of a parish to another kind of parish. And during my time in Lewis County, I also helped, I did not do only, but I helped assist those who were closing Holy Rosary Parish in Tacoma. Of the 17 parishes that I have served, 6 of them I have helped close. I tell you this, first of all, let's pause for a moment so that you are reassured. I tell you this not to say that St. Mark's is a candidate for closure and not to say that St. Mark's is in danger, or at least not imminent danger of any kind of closure. So rest assured of that. Hear me very clearly as I say this to you. We are not currently in danger of closure. But I tell you these things because I know what I'm talking about. Of the priests of the Archdiocese, I am one of very few who have been involved in multiple parish closures. And I know what a healthy parish looks like. And I know what an unhealthy parish looks like, or at least can look like, and where it ends. So, with that seriousness laid before you, what do those parishes have in common? What do those parishes look like? Where, how did they get to that point? Now, I wasn't there for the whole time of their lifetime, so I can't tell you all the things that they had or all the factors. And some of those parishes had some real obvious things. One parish had $130,000 of roof repair and a budget of $60,000. That's an obvious numbers game, right? And there's no way that they could raise that kind of money and make their budget, which they very rarely made anyway. Another parish had 25 people coming to Mass every single Sunday. They had 1 staff member part-time. They couldn't support it either physically or financially. Another parish had a roof that needed to be replaced to the tune of $150,000 or $200,000. Another parish only had 10 families. It was actually a mission or a a station. And when the retired priest couldn't serve anymore, that one closed down. But all of them, every single one of them, was not prepared for the day when they needed to evaluate their own viability or how they were doing. All of them fell into the trap of thinking, our parish will last forever. Our parish is doing just fine. We're members of the Roman Catholic Church. Everything is stable. And that's not true. The Roman Catholic Church will exist forever. The body of Christ will never fail. But individual parishes are not the church. Individual parishes are small clusters of the whole church. But those can move and those can change. And those things do happen. The three things that were easy markers of these parishes that needed to be closed, the three categories, I would say, of any parish, the livelihood of a parish, whether it stays open or closed, are this. Numbers are obviously a big one. How are their finances doing? Are they hitting their budget and exceeding, maybe stocking a little way for saving or at least having growth in that area? Are their numbers in the parish doing well? Obviously, a parish that is 25 families or 25 people on a mass is not doing well. But also, a parish that is declining, even if it's got big numbers, it's consistently declining, that's a concern as well. But perhaps one of the biggest things to look at in a community is how engaged are its parishioners. I would say to you that while all of those parishes, all of those communities, not all of them were parishes, some were missions and stations, but all of those communities, all of them had people who loved their community, but largely and almost exclusively on Sunday. They came to Mass, they cared about Mass, they cared about being there, many of them, at least the majority of them. And then the rest of the week, that was that. Parish was 1 hour on a week, and they didn't think about it, or at least didn't get a lot of thought, not a lot of critical thought, to how that community looked the rest of the week. That kind of thing, those decline in numbers of both parishioners and finances, as well as, crucially, a decline in the sense of community and the decline in the sense of engagement, that's what ends up leading a parish to a place where it might be a candidate for closure. Now, again, I keep using that word because I want to get your attention, but I want to stop again before I move on to the next section of my homily to say, we are not a candidate for closure. We are not in a place where closure is even an option. It has not been discussed. The bishop has not mentioned it. The chancery has not raised it at all. But we need to be aware that we are in the midst of a vocation crisis. We need to be aware that in our archdiocese, this very year, our archdiocese struggled to find enough priests to place enough priests to cover the responsibilities that we have for parishes to have their own priest. And in fact, in this archdiocese, in this very year, six different communities found themselves merged with other ones. And I can tell you the story of one, because until recently, I lived with him. You all know that when I came here, I was living up in Everett. And my buddy, Father Altenhoffen, just this last week, it was announced that he is now named pastor, not of Immaculate Conception and Perpetual Help, but of a new parish that is the result of those two parishes, Immaculate Conception and Perpetual Help, being merged into one. It's been a two-year process. It's been a painful process. It's been one that has been rife with denial and frustration and sorrow. And it's been one where, in the examination of those three categories, it was finally realized in a way that probably should have been realized years ago that those areas were deficient and that the merging of those parishes was necessary. I don't think that's necessary for St. Mark's. But the reason that I have brought all this up, I've ramped for 13 minutes to this point now, is because we could be there and we are having struggles. And there are those three areas where we are struggling. A couple weeks ago, Todd Chapman, our PAA, included in the bulletin a report on our finances. And Todd is an optimistic guy, and so he painted a pretty optimistic report. But you'll notice that if you look at the numbers, that the numbers for our income have been declining since 2019. And in fact, we are projecting somewhere between $150,000 and $170,000 difference between 2019 and now, which is to say that we are pulling in $150,000 to $170,000 less than we did since 2019. Now, to be clear, there's no fingers to be pointed. There's no blame to be assigned. We just went through and are just on the tail end of a pandemic. But nonetheless, that's a pretty big drop. And while our expenses have been lessened by both cuts that we have made and staffing changes and liturgical changes, you'll notice that it is an all-volunteer choir. You'll notice today at the Mass that we have reduced a lot of our expenses. In fact, visibly, we have less candles on the altar. We're trying to make other changes as well, but our expenses have not dropped by that much. And what has kept us afloat over the last 2 years? Well, first of all, to be very, very clear, you have, because your donations still have, by and large, been relatively steady. But it's also been supplemented for 2 years by two different PPP loans. Those loans, one of which has already been forgiven and the other one will be forgiven, we're in the application process in fairly short order, but those loans will be expended, or which is to say, we'll have used them up by the end of this fiscal year, which is June 30th. On July 1st, we will enter into a new fiscal year. And now we have to start asking ourselves questions. Where do we go from here? How do we grow as a parish? We can't look at calling back people who've left. Many people have left the state or left the parish, gone to other places, and recruiting the same old people or having them back, they've made changes, they've made decisions, and that's okay. We don't mind that. We respect that. But at the same time, how do we draw people into our parish? How do we attract people into our community? And the question, how do we ourselves participate in the parish? How are we not just one stop on Sunday people, but also members of a community? What does it mean for me to be a parishioner? What does it mean for us to be a parish? How is the Lord calling us to be more engaged as St. Mark's parishioners and as St. Mark's parish? There's a couple of easy benchmarks that I would encourage you to pray over and think about. First of all, are you giving to the parish? Obviously, we have a need. And the question I would ask you is not how much. People sometimes ask me, Father, do you look at how much people donate? No, I absolutely do not. I am not interested whatsoever in how much you give. That has to be a discernment between you and your family and the Lord. If I try to guide that, if I try to give you a percentage or an amount, I am invariably going to either ask too little or I'm going to ask too much. Not my call. But a question I do have for you is, are you giving? And are you giving to a point where you feel that you are fulfilling God's call? Or perhaps, are you giving too little? Or, in all honesty, because I know it's true for some folks, perhaps you felt for a while you're giving too much. That reality may exist. But nonetheless, are you giving to the parish, and are you giving in a way the Lord is calling you to? I do get reports, or rather I look up reports and have the help of our staff, to realize that not everybody gives. And admittedly, not everybody gives in an envelope, so it could be that you're putting cash into the basket. That's fair. But I think that it's also true that not everybody gives. And what's the difference? I believe it's somewhere around about a third of the community gives in a trackable way, if you will, checks or in an envelope. Do more than a third give? I trust that's so, because of course we have the basket and people put in cash. But let's say conservatively that two-thirds of the parish gives, which means there's probably at least a third of people who don't give. If you're one of those people, I would like to ask you, what would you need to do to change that? And I'm not saying, what do I need to do, but just what would you need to do? What would that look like for you to change that? The second thing, how many people are in the pews? How many people are here? Why is it that our parish doesn't attract more people? I would suggest to you that this is related to the third question, which is with regards to engagement. People are attracted to success. People are attracted to activity. When you look at our calendar at the parish, do you notice that it seems, and it seems to me, over the last pandemic again, we could blame COVID, and reasonably so, that a lot of our activities have declined at the parish. Now, our staff can't take on more. We can't offer more. In our staff, we are, let's see, our maintenance facility manager, our principal, our front receptionist, our front office desk, our PAA, our faith formation director, who is also our deacon, and our pastor. That's six staff members. And I can assure you, we are working at practically full capacity. To add on more programs and more things isn't a reasonable thing to demand or ask of them. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. We have something like 650 families in this parish. And that probably translates to over 1,000, maybe as many as 2,000 people. Sorry, maybe that includes kids too. So maybe a little less than that. So the question becomes, in that third question, which is again related to the second, how do we want to be as a parish? What things do we want to do? What things would excite other people? And I'm not just talking about the basic ministries. We need those. Don't get me wrong. We need ushers. And if you're excited about being an usher, please talk to me. We need homebound ministers. And if you're excited about being a homebound minister, please talk to me. We need lectors. We need people who help with the decorations. We need people who help with the altar and cleaning the linen. We need people in setting up and closing down. We need basics in faith formation and teaching and the passing on of the faith. Those are things that are the core of the parish, and those are the things that the staff and I have direct responsibility to make sure happen, which usually involves me asking, as I have been, until people respond. But there is also the other part. What excites you? What do you want to do at St. Mark's? What are the kinds of things that you think I would like to see this at St. Mark's? And not just in the sense of somebody else do it, but I'd be excited to be part of this and contributing to it. What kinds of things do you recall that you see at other parishes and go, huh, I'd like to see that happen here and I'd like to contribute to it? Or, I remember doing this, and you know, it'd be kind of fun to find some like-minded people to do that as well. There are things that we've done in the past that we could do again. Adoration, 24-hour adoration, which was struggling before we got here, so we'd need to organize pretty well to make that happen again. The pro-life group, being able to reach out, maybe find new initiatives to reach out to those who are particularly in need. And we know, especially with the latest Supreme Court piece, that there is going to be a greater need as well as a greater outcry, but also a greater need to support those who are in crisis and those who are needing help. Perhaps there are other things as well. Maybe we get more excited about St. Vincent de Paul and become that kind of outreach. Maybe we look to the homeless and say, you know what, we really want to be ones who reach out to those who are experiencing homelessness or in a special need. Maybe we look around at our community and see that we are surrounded, as we are near a hospital, by nursing homes and assisted living facilities, and say we want to be an outreach parish. We want to be those who go out and create teams, who visit people, who sing to them throughout the year at Christmas or different holidays, who go and bring communion or pray the rosary, or just walk in and say, I'm here to talk to anyone who's lonely. Maybe there are other things, too. Maybe we want to be a study parish where we focus and dive deeply into the various teachings of the church or scriptures or various areas of focus that we might come together and learn together and become experts in our own way. Maybe we want to be a prayer parish, a kind of parish that embraces different forms of prayer or charismatic movement or other things as well. I don't mean to limit you in offering these suggestions, but rather to spark something in you, because here is the thing. It is not enough for you to sit in the pew. That's the bare minimum. Don't get me wrong. You coming here to Mass has filled your Sunday obligations, so congratulations. This is good. But that will not get you into heaven alone. Because when you are in heaven, you and I will be required is the wrong word. We will be animated to be fully engaged with the Lord and the communion of saints. And if that sounds exhausting, that's fair. It probably is to some degree, at least here on earth. But we ought to be practicing it. We ought to be trying it out and going, how can I be a little more engaged? How can I be a little more enthusiastic about the things that I'm enthusiastic about? No forcing down the throat, no saying you must do this or must do that. Kind of like my mom said, I don't want to force you. I don't want to make you fit a mold that I fit. But rather, what are the things that would fit you? What are the things that would fit our larger community? And who else in the community shares your passion? Because none of this needs to be done alone. None of this should be done alone. We are a whole community. We are a parish family. And if we come together, and if we do the work together, and if we allow each other to support each other, not one person taking it on or one group being the sole responsibility, but all of us together saying, hey, this is something I'd like to do. We can do wonderful things. I tell you all of this, and I'm going to wrap up now because I know I'm approaching the 25-minute mark, and I knew this was going to happen, and that's okay. But I want to wrap it up with this. This is the beginning of the conversation, not the end. Again, to offer you that consolation, I talked about closures and scary things because I wanted you to know that this is serious, and we do face some serious discernment and serious decisions. But we're not at a breaking point. We have a relatively healthy savings account. We have a relatively healthy, at least looking around the community and looking around the room, healthy both diversity and interest of parishioners. Our numbers have not dropped so much that we feel like we're in crisis. But if we don't make some decisions and make some moves over the next year or two, we could be. And that's cause to sit back and go, how do I want to see this parish go? Because I don't want to see it go in that direction. And how do I want to see it go? And perhaps, too, I should have mentioned this earlier, where does the Lord want us? How is the Lord calling us? What does Jesus Christ have in mind for St. Mark Parish? Because it's kind of an exciting time. We get to redefine ourselves. We get to renew ourselves. We get to decide, or discern and decide, what do we want to be as parishioners, as a parish, as a community? How do I want to be involved? In the coming weeks, we'll be providing more information. We're currently working on a report to give a better breakdown of some of the numbers I've given, also more accurate. I've tried to summarize them very briefly here, but I'm not a PAA and I'm not a bookkeeper, so we've got some review things between our pastoral council and our staff. We'll be including some of those things in the bulletin in future weeks, as well as more talking points. And I will be responding to your questions in my homilies, so I am very happy to hear your feedback, when you talk to me after Mass or throughout the week. But I want to leave you with these three questions, and they're the same three questions I offered at the beginning. What does it mean to be a parishioner? What does it mean for me, not just them over there or a whole group, but me individually? What does it mean for me to be a parishioner? If I were joining a club, I'd want to know the times they meet and what they expect and my own investment in it. So what does it mean for me? All of us should be asking this, for me to be a parishioner. The second thing, what does it mean for us to be a parish? And we know what it means in the canonical sense or in the definition, so you can look that up. I've included a little bit of that in the pastor's note. But what does it mean here at St. Mark's? St. Mark's is something special. St. Mark's has something that is wonderful, and it is unique to us. And we want to play to those strengths. We don't want to convert it into something we're not. But also, what does it mean? Where is the Lord calling us to both grow and expand, to both be challenged, as well as to be comfortable in who we are? And finally, how is the Lord calling us to engage more fully? Yes, financially, but also as a community. Both and, not either or. How is the Lord calling us to engage more fully as individuals, as a community? I want this to end on an optimistic note, and so I want to tell you that this is an exciting time, and it can be an exciting time, but it does require us to prayerfully discern that. And so this is my invitation. Prayerfully discern with me, not just only the staff or the pastoral council. Yes, we are leaders. We are those who have a great responsibility, but we are not the parish, at least not alone. All of us here together, coming to this parish, are St. Mark's Parish, not just the staff, not just the council, certainly not just the building, but all of us who are members. May we ask the Lord to help us. May we ask the Lord to guide us. And may we ask the Lord to animate us, that we might be more fully who we are meant to be, as parishioners, as Catholics, and as a community here at St. Mark's.